there was a time back when there were suggestions that nurses and other primary health caregivers could actually be on the lookout for people who might be suffering from this and set in motion interventions that might make some kind of difference. Lisa Vetten is a research and project consultant at the Faculty of Humanities at the University of Johannesburg. Ms. Vetten, welcome and thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, John, and good afternoon to your listeners.
This is something you've spoken about in the Mail and Guardian. What do we have either in our policy documents or even in our legal system that would allow much more preemptive action than we're currently taking?
Well, we do have that forgotten remnant of the primary healthcare policy, but I think we have a real opportunity now because the amendments to the Domestic Violence Act that the President has sent at the end of January actually have this very short little phrase that requires the Director General of Health to develop directives around the kinds of services that should be offered to those who are experiencing domestic violence. So it's an opportunity to resuscitate that original idea, to look at the very promising models of people who've tried to pilot and test this, and also to think more broadly, such as what are the roles that paramedics can play, who are often the first on a scene when somebody is injured. So what role could they play? There's also a question of what could doctors be doing in casualty? You know, instead of simply stitching up women, giving them a pill and sending them home, couldn't they be doing more? And lastly, it's a challenge to universities. How could they be training their future nurses and doctors in order to recognize and address domestic violence instead of just keeping quiet and effectively communicating the message that this is not something you speak about?
So tell us about the doing more. What would it consist of? Because presumably it would need to be integrated where a nurse isn't just saying, well, hang on a bit, this looks wrong, this suggests domestic violence. Something else would need to be triggered and somebody else would need to act.
That's right. So what this could really be is the making of a comprehensive intervention. So for instance, if a nurse picks up that this looks suspicious, these are the kinds of symptoms that you see with domestic violence, and she asks the right and sensitive questions, and she gets a yes, you know, that would then trigger potentially a referral to a shelter. So it would mean that shelters and health facilities would need to start communicating along with other domestic violence organizations. It would also mean starting to connect with the police, and it would mean, for instance, as well, connecting with the courts. This is where you can get a protection order. And we saw some of this actually happening during the lockdown, which I think is where you can see its potential. The hospitals were actually organizing to get women to shelters when they were brought in during the lockdown. So there's a basis for this.
I'm just trying to think. I mean, people in the caring professions defined broadly presumably would have instincts to do that. Do you think they've stopped doing it because they have thought, well, I tried it and nobody actually followed up, nobody did their part of what might be an important preventive remedy?
That's a very important problem that you're highlighting, John. I think it's one of the single biggest hurdles to trying to make this work. It's one of the reasons why I think we would have to take a relatively modest and contained approach in order to get people to start working together, because they don't. And I think, you know, anybody who tries to help and then finds that help goes nowhere, as you say, just gets disillusioned and demotivated and is left thinking, why ask someone to tell you about something very painful if you can't offer them help? So that's a very big issue to look at. The other issue we also have to take into account, especially I think after COVID, is the massive overload and dysfunction, I think, in our healthcare system. So you can't ask doctors and nurses to do anything too extravagant and too grand on top of what they're already doing.
Isn't there another layer at which this gets quite difficult? And that is, if you stick your neck out, but more importantly, the person being abused actually takes what would be a personal risk for them as well. And if it doesn't work out, you may find yourself 4 steps backwards from where you were before.
Well, that hasn't happened in the clinics where this has been piloted. It's actually worked very well. The research has demonstrated it's put women in contact if you've done necessary networking beforehand, and it has also reduced their ongoing experience of violence. So the key interventions here are training giving nurses and doctors information materials, giving them mentoring support and supervision, and ensuring that there are the links to the services. If you can put that in place, then you can make this functional and helpful.
Thank you very much. Really interesting. Lisa Vetten with us from the Faculty of Humanities at the University of Johannesburg. Quick question. I mean, if you work in clinics, hospitals, maybe in private practice, and you have taken steps when what you've seen tells you with a high degree of certainty that someone is a victim of domestic abuse, have you managed to do something? I'd really like to know how that turned out, particularly if you're working in the public health space where perhaps you're heavily dependent on other government departments. Either way, call me on 011 883 0702.